but it was passenger number 4 that I was looking at. If you see something, say something. She was seated on the right side of the car, all alone on the farther 8-person bench, across from and about halfway between the exhausted West African woman and the guy with the ball player's eyes. She was white, and probably in her 40s. She was plain. She had black hair, neatly but unstylishly cut, and too uniformly dark to be natural. She was dressed all in black. I could see her fairly well. The guy nearest to me on the right was still sitting forward, and the V-shaped void between his bent back and the wall of the car made my line of sight uninterrupted, except for a forest of stainless steel grab bars. Not a perfect view, but good enough to ring every bell on the 11-point list. The bullet headings lit up like cherries on a Vegas machine. According to Israeli counterintelligence, I was looking at a suicide bomber. Chapter 2. I dismissed the thought immediately. Not because of racial profiling. White women are as capable of craziness as anyone else. I dismissed the thought because of tactical implausibility. The timing was wrong. The New York subway would make a fine target for a suicide bombing. The 6 train would be as good as any other, and better than most. It stops under Grand Central Terminal. 8 in the morning, 6 at night, a crowded car, 40 seated, 148 standing, wait until the doors open on packed platforms, push the button. 100 dead, a couple of 100 grievously injured, panic, infrastructure damage, possibly fire, a major transportation hub shut down for days or weeks, and maybe never really trusted again. A significant score for people whose heads work in ways we can't quite understand. But not at 2 o'clock in the morning. Not in a car holding just 6 people. Not when Grand Central subway platforms would hold only drifting trash and empty cups and a couple of old homeless guys on benches. The train stopped at Astor Place. The doors hissed open. No one got on. No one got off. The doors thumped shut again, and the motors whined, and the train moved on. The bullet points stayed lit up. The first was the obvious no-brainer. Inappropriate clothing. By now, explosive belts are as evolved as baseball gloves. Take a 3-foot by 2-foot sheet of heavy canvas, fold once longitudinally, and you have a continuous pocket a foot deep. Wrap the pocket around the bomber and sew it together in back. Zippers or snaps can lead to second thoughts. Insert a stockade of dynamite sticks into the pocket all the way around. Wire them up, pack nails or ball bearings into the voids, sew the top seam shut, add crude shoulder straps to take the weight. Altogether effective, but altogether bulky. The only practical concealment, an oversized garment like a padded winter parka, never appropriate in the Middle East, and plausible in New York maybe 3 months in 12. But this was September, and it was as hot as summer, and 10 degrees hotter underground. I was wearing a T-shirt. Passenger number 4 was wearing a North Face down jacket, black, puffy, shiny, a little too large, and zipped to her chin. If you see something, say something. I took a pass on the second of the 11 points, not immediately applicable. The second point is a robotic walk. Significant at a checkpoint or in a crowded marketplace or outside a church or a mosque, but not relevant with a seated suspect on public transportation. Bombers walk robotically, not because they're overcome with ecstasy at the thought of imminent martyrdom, but because they're carrying 40 extra pounds of unaccustomed weight, which is biting into their shoulders through crude suspender straps, and because they're drugged. Martyrdom's appeal goes only so far. Most bombers are brow-beaten simpletons with a slug of raw opium paste held between gum and cheek. We know this because dynamite belts explode with a characteristic donut-shaped pressure wave that rolls up the torso in a fraction of a nanosecond and lifts the head clean off the shoulders. The human head isn't bolted on. It just rests there by gravity, somewhat tied down by skin and muscles and tendons and ligaments, but those insubstantial biological anchors don't do much against the force of a violent chemical explosion. My Israeli mentor told me the easiest way to determine that an open-air attack was caused by a suicide bomber rather than by a car bomb or a package bomb is to search on an 80 or 90-foot radius and look for a severed human head, which is likely to be strangely intact and undamaged, even down to the opium plug in the cheek. The train stopped at Union Square. No one got on. No one got off. Hot air billowed in from the platform and fought the interior air conditioning. Then the doors closed again and the train moved on. Points 3 through 6 are variations on a subjective theme. Irritability, sweating, tics, and nervous behavior. Although in my opinion, sweating is as likely to be caused by physical overheating as by nerves. The inappropriate clothing, and the dynamite. Dynamite is wood pulp soaked with nitroglycerin and molded into baton-sized sticks. Wood pulp is a good thermal insulator, so sweating comes with the territory. But the irritability and the tics and the nervous behavior are valuable indicators. These people are in the last weird moments of their lives. Anxious, scared of pain, woozy with narcotics, they are irrational by definition. Believing or half-believing or not really believing at all in paradise and rivers of milk and honey and lush pastures and virgins, driven by ideological pressures or by the expectations of their peers and their families, suddenly in too deep and unable to back out. Brave talk in clandestine meetings is one thing. Action is another. Hence, suppressed panic with all its visible signs. Passenger number 4 was showing them all. She looked exactly like a woman heading for the end of her life, as surely and certainly as the train was heading for the end of the line. Therefore, point 7, breathing.